Good evening, everybody. This is Josh Placer from GameWisdom.com. Welcome to another great episode of the Percepta Podcast. This week, we are returning to our topic of minority representation in video games. Last time we spoke, we talked more about women representation. For this one, we're going to talk more specifically about minorities and people of color. And we got a few great guests tonight. First, contributor to GameWisdom, who you should be seeing and hearing a lot more from as the weeks go on, please welcome James Ellerby.
Hi, guys.
Hi, James. And my next guest is a friend of James who is also an actor and is also very interested in talking about this topic. Please welcome Ezekiel Jackson.
Hello, everyone.
Ezekiel, it's great to have you on the cast tonight.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. So, to get things started, then, let's do a little catch-up. For you, James, how's everything going?
Things are going pretty good, actually. We've had a lot of nice weather down here in Lancaster, and me and my lady took a walk today and enjoyed being out in the nice weather.
Sounds great, James. And how about yourself, Ezekiel? How's everything going?
Everything's been going really well. It's been a pretty busy week just with work, and I've had a few auditions this week, and things are looking good so far this year for me.
Cool. And for me, I'm doing all right. The YouTube channel is bustling along. We've been doing a lot more with cross-posting. Even though you guys listening to the cast will probably be hearing this sometime in April, I'm getting ready for a little vacation in mid-March at the moment. So that'll be my little week away from the bustle of the website. So it'll be nice to get away, you know, unplug for 5 days before jacking back in for a while. So, to get things going then, since this is your first time on the cast, Ezekiel, could you tell everyone listening, you know, a little bit about yourself, you know, what you do and your interest in the video game industry, or just video games in general?
Sure, yeah. well, you know, my name is Ezekiel Jackson. I'm an actor. I do stage. I do film work. Nothing big yet in terms of film. But, yeah, so I went to college at the American Musical Dramatic Academy, AMDA, New York and L.A. Lived out in L.A. for a few years. Moved back about 3-4 years ago to Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Everything's been going good on that end. I really much enjoy gaming, and I enjoy the storytelling of a video game. Mm-hmm. Being an actor, also just hearing the voiceover actors and how they are conveying emotion and how the game captures what they're conveying visually. Mm-hmm. And I just love that medium because as an actor myself, I've wanted to dabble in doing voiceover work, and that's something I'd really like to break into at some point when I'm ready. So I just have always been in love with gaming, just the storytelling, the different worlds, the different crazy ideas that people come up with. Yes, yeah. The gameplay, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, we've seen a lot more of that push for deeper stories, more interactive storytelling, probably over the last 10, 16 years. Like, 2000 onward has been a really great time for seeing the medium evolve. What are some of the games you really like playing, or some of your favorite titles?
Well, being the nerd that I am, I love the Arkham games, Batman being one of my favorite superheroes of all time. Mm-hmm. Those are really just so well done in my opinion. The Last of Us, obviously, because that's such an immersive story. I love, also huge wrestling fans, so I love just playing the WWE 2K games or the SmackDown vs. Raws or whatever. Pretty much played them all. UFC games as well. I'm a big MMA guy. Mm-hmm. I love first-person shooters as well. I'm not huge on them as much. Like, my brother is a big first-person shooter person. Me, not so much. I love them still, but I just feel like they're pretty much copy and paste, same thing.
Yeah. The first-person shooter genre has definitely gotten a little stagnant, at least in terms of the big AAA side of things. Now, I know at the time of this recording, Ubisoft just released the third-person shooter The Division, which I've been hearing a lot of interesting buzz about. And I know we spoke before the cast, but Ezekiel and James, you both have picked that up. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think about that when we talk about that in a few minutes. To start off the cast, and let's talk a little bit about news of the week. And personally, I don't really have too much, like, big news that's standing out to me. The most interesting thing I read at the time of this recording was that Blizzard has finally decided to update Diablo 2 after like 14, 15 years since the last patch, which on one hand speaks to Blizzard's commitment to quality, and the other hand is just weird as hell to me thinking that they're still patching that game. So for you guys, James, we'll start with you. Do you have any interesting news or anything you found interesting about the game industry this week?
News and the game industry. Well, I know the first patch this Monday or Tuesday was the first patch for Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. I think the Xbox and PlayStation 4 versions. Xbox One and PlayStation 4 versions. They just patched that up. In the patch, I think they added a new zone, which is a remake of one of the zones from Plants vs. Zombies 1. Mm-hmm. And they rebalanced some of the characters and stuff like that. So I think that's probably as much as I know as far as the gaming news goes.
Yeah. This is, again, one of those dead weeks. For those of you listening to this cast, probably at the time of recording or time of posting or beyond, next week from our set is going to be GDC, and that is, of course, the big annual Game Developers Conference. A lot of fun. Definitely one of the big places to get out to if you have any interest in meeting people in the industry, seeing a lot of great presentations, and keeping in time or keeping in touch with Plants vs. Zombies. That's where I saw the presentation about how the lead designer designed Plants vs. Zombies, the original one, to make it as appealing as possible to non-gamers as well as gamers. So that was an amazing discussion. And I would love to get back out there. I just do not have the money at the moment, you know, for flying out, hotel, and all the incidentals there. But love to go maybe next year. Who knows? Maybe the site is doing great. We can spend some time there next March. But yeah, GDC, definitely a great place to go to. For those of you listening, like students or enthusiasts out there, it's definitely something you really do want to get out to at least once just to experience it, and especially for the networking side of things. And hopefully, after GDC, and by the time you're listening to this cast, there'll be a lot of more interesting buzz and big reveals. I know I've gotten a few emails from press people already. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot more come next week. So, other than that, there's, again, not much news, at least from our front. Zeal, did you hear anything interesting on your end or things that you're following regarding the game industry?
Well, one thing, just because I'm a Pokemon fan, and Pokemon Go has been delayed again, so we'll see for how long this time, I guess. Mm-hmm. Sort of connecting with the video game world, but it's also in the movie world. But Assassin's Creed got greenlit for a sequel, and we don't really know much about the first film yet, so there's that. And so it's also one of those things where it's a video game that's going to be a movie, and those haven't really been all that well in the past. Mm-hmm. History has proven that they usually don't work. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with Assassin's Creed and, of course, World of Warcraft, but that's about it on my end.
Yeah. Again, for people listening, this is just one of those dead weeks, unfortunately. Just not much to talk about. But it is an exciting time for game releases, and I'm sure we've all played some very interesting games, at least over the course of the week. So, let's move on to that topic. For me, I have two games I want to bring up. The first one is the Pinball Arcade. For those of you listening to this cast at the time, my interview with Farsight Studios should be either up or going up by this time. And I'm really getting into the Pinball Arcade, again, as a lover of classic pinball. It's a very great platform. Have either of you heard of the Pinball Arcade before?
I don't think so. I mean, I used to play pinball on, like, the old, a lot of my older computers. Could I tell you anything about them? No. But, yeah, I did used to play them on the old probably like Windows Vista and stuff like that, I think used to come with a couple of pinball games installed.
Okay. Well, The pinball arcade is owned by a studio called Farsight Studios. They've been doing this for, I think it's going on at least 10 plus years at this moment. And they specialize in digitizing all the classic pinballs, you know, the actual physical tables back in the day. And they digitize them so you can play them almost exactly how they would be in the arcade, but on your computer. They built their own physics model to try to simulate the ball as realistically as possible. And it's pretty much a way of people who would never be able to own or get to play these classic tables to play them from the comfort of either a computer or for on a console or a mobile device. So playing them, it's really like a going back in a time machine, looking at classic pinball tables. They have, I believe, from their oldest table is 1966 on there. I know they have tables up to 1997, probably a little bit more than that. But it spans basically the history of pinball, and just like the video game industry, it's just very fascinating to look at how things have changed over those years. From, like with pinball, for instance, going from the older tables where there really wasn't a lot to do there, to more of the popular tables with like video modes, crazy multi-balls, flashing LEDs, stuff like that. And the pinball arcade right now, I think they're pretty much it in terms of creating these virtual digital representations of the classic tables. They've done 4 Kickstarters at the time of this recording to get the licensings for these tables, which is a huge deal because the most popular tables are those that have, you know, some of the most popular IPs behind them. So Doctor Who, Star Trek.
Star Wars, probably.
Yeah. And a lot of those tables, it's just very challenging to get those IPs. A lot of people want the Simpsons pinball, which was a very popular table back in the 90s, but I don't even want to think of how much it's going to cost them to get in touch with Fox to get the IP rights for that table. Because it's not just about the table, it's about, you know, all the actors, all the artwork, sound effects, etc. And I've been playing it. There is a playlist on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel now of me going through these tables and trying to learn and play from them. And when I spoke with Mike Lindsay, he is one of the, I think he was an admin or one of the community people at Farsight. We talked about our shared love of pinball and just how deep it is for people who want to learn it. Like, for people who aren't used to pinball, it just seems like chaos. You're hitting the flippers and watching the ball go all over the place until it tilts or you drain. But watching, like, professional people play and learning on my end, there is a lot of nuance to playing pinball, especially if you're trying to do the advanced stuff, like get wizard mode and actually beat these tables. A few of the videos I have now have actually gone to what's considered Grand Champion high score, which is like the highest score they've set for those tables in the game itself. And if you get good at it, you can play like a single run for like good 20, 30 minutes without having the ball drain. But it's definitely a great game. The only downside is also very expensive to play the pinball arcade. Because these are all real tables, there's the additional cost, again, of the licensing and the work that goes into them. So in order to play the tables, you have to buy, if you're playing on the mobile devices, you can buy them individually. For the PC, you have to buy Seasons, which is like usually like 8 or 9 tables, and they're $30 a pop for that collection of tables. So it's not exactly cheap, but on the other hand, if you want to play pinball for real, it's going to cost you a whole lot more to get like a real table, or, you know, tons and tons of quarters if you're near an arcade to play them. But definitely a great thing for fans or people who aren't used to pinball or like something to show off. And we even talked about on that podcast what modern pinball is like. You know, there's still companies making pinball, despite the fact that the arcade industry is not really that big anymore. Yet pinball is still one of the few things that has survived, and in some cases thrived for a lot of them. The other game that I'm enjoying, which I'm not sure if either of you have played this series before, but it's called Stardew Valley. And this is a game that's been lighting up the indie side for, wow, like the last 2-3 weeks, probably still will be generating buzz for those of you listening. And it's the spiritual successor, in a sense, to the game Harvest Moon. Have either of you played that series before?
I've played the Harvest Moon series maybe like some of the older ones on like the Game Boy. I think wasn't there one on a Game Boy Advance system? I think I played like that Harvest Moon. But yeah, I'm familiar with the Harvest Moon series.
So the series is definitely one of those guilty pleasures for me, especially as someone who, again, plays a lot of the hardcore stuff. I mean, I play Dark Souls, Darkest Dungeon, Diablo 3 hardcore, you know, very challenging, very strenuous games. The Harvest Moon series is the complete opposite. It's a very relaxing game. It's about you're basically managing a farm and you set your own goals. You decide, you know, what you want planned, how you want to deal with the townsfolk, and you're pretty much just living the life of a farmer. Nothing more, nothing less. There's no, you know, eldritch hordes underneath your farm that you're going to have to stop from taking over the world or anything like that. So the series has been on and off for the last few years. So Stardew Valley is an inspiration from those games. It has no relation. Like, the person who made them, he never worked for, I think it's Natsumine. He just decided to spend the last 4 years or so making this passion project to make the PC equivalent of that series. And from what we're seeing, it works really well. It's, again, it has that DNA of you're just building this farm up. There's a lot more choice in terms of how you design things. There's even combat, which was added in the another spiritual successor to Harvest Moon, Rune Factory, which is basically Harvest Moon meets like a hack and slash game.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so this has been a passion project of the developer now for over 4 years. He finally released it, and the game has been lighting up. I think he's sold, I think he's in the millions now in terms of copies sold.
Wow.
Let me see if I can get an exact number. While I'm looking that up, so I haven't had a chance to dig too deep into the game. I've been, again, busy with more Grim Dawn and Darkest Dungeon, so I'm going to use Stardew Valley as sort of like my relaxing game when I'm, you know, stressed out from dying in those games to go to that. But let me see if I can grab... Oh, my mistake. He sold, as of Wednesday, well, over 400,000 copies, which, again, is, while it's not exactly in the millions, it's still very impressive.
That's still pretty good, yeah.
For an indie developer, especially one that, again, it just really popped out of nowhere for a lot of people. But it's looking like it's going to be probably one of the more interesting and well-received indie games so far 2016. I know a few weeks ago, Superhot was like the indie darling for a little bit. But I'm really excited about Stardew Valley, not just for the fact that this developer was able to, you know, make his dream game, but the fact he was able to make his dream game for a particular genre that we really don't see a lot of these days, especially not for the PC. The Harvest Moon series has primarily been, since it is from a Japanese developer, it's always been on the console or the handheld versions. And it's actually a very interesting tangent, probably one a little too big to get into too much detail about tonight, but it really shows just how much PC gaming has really changed and how we're starting to see more of these genres and games for the PC market that we wouldn't really see otherwise, like Stardew Valley, a lot of Street Fighter V, a good example, what we just talked about with Tim on earlier casts. Like, these would be games that you wouldn't see on the PC, but we're seeing either developers port them, like with Street Fighter, or like Tom Clancy, The Division, or we're seeing indie developers just say, you know what, I want to make this game for the PC, I think it's going to sell, and it is. So I sent an email to the developer, I would love to talk to him about his time, but I'm sure he's going to be swimming in emails for the coming weeks. But those have been the games that I've played. So we'll move on to you guys, and this time we'll start with Ezekiel. What games have you been playing lately?
Well, yesterday, just got The Division, Tom Clancy's The Division, and that's what I've been, obviously, real recently, but before that, I've just played a couple of much older titles, like real late to the party, but I got Shadow of Mordor, and I've been playing that a little bit, and I love that game. Just want to put that out there. I really enjoy that game. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's repetitive, but it's still a lot of fun. I enjoy those types of games. But But Tom Clancy's The Division. I really enjoy third-person shooter games. I think a lot more. I like to be able to see the person. I feel like it's not so much chaos for me. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really gotten too deep into the story yet in terms of the gate, the story mode, if you will, which I think it's all online. Mm-hmm. You're playing with other players, which is really cool, and I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to really think because I haven't really gotten into the game yet because it's only got it yesterday. So, I mean, as of right now, I really enjoy the game. I'm enjoying the mechanics as of right now. Mm-hmm. Running is a little difficult sometimes. I feel like I don't know why. Maybe it's my controller. I don't know. But other than that, everything's really good with the game so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking about Shadows of Mordor, that's one of the games I found really interesting. I played a little bit at the time. I liked it. But I think I was just so burnt out from like playing other open world games or open style games that it just didn't grab me the same way like something like Mad Max or Just Cause 2 did. Or going with what you were talking about earlier, Zigo, like the Batman Arkham series. Like, I loved Arkham City to the point that I think I 100% that game. I just played until I found everything there was. But Mortar just didn't catch me. I think it felt like there was just so many things to do that I felt overloaded by it.
Yeah, I can feel that. There is a whole lot to do. That there are a lot of open world games that are always all these side missions, and it's like they don't really mean anything. They don't really drive the plot of the main story along. Sometimes they're fun, sometimes they're really useless. And I can see how you can see that. I mean, maybe it's just because I haven't been playing a lot of open world, so maybe I don't feel the same like exhaustion from doing it over and over again with a bunch of other games. Mm-hmm. But I know for me, it's just like I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, so getting to return to that world and be a character in that world and just really get to do the things I love watching in the films and in the books, it's awesome to me. Just my fandom all the more.
Yeah. And we're definitely seeing a lot more developers go for these really great games based on IPs. Like I just said, Mad Max. I know Mad Max definitely had some polarizing thoughts at the time, especially due to bugs on the PC version, but I really did enjoy that game. I think that was like one of like the most like beautiful looking games, despite taking place in like this wasteland at the time. But we're also seeing stuff like Far Cry, Tom Clancy's Division, and I'm just really interested to see what they're going to do with... I know we mentioned a few minutes ago regarding Assassin's Creed, they're making the movie of it, but I'm also generally interested to see what they're going to do with that series, because I know there's been complaints that the series itself has stagnated due to annual releases, and I know they've decided to cancel whatever one they were planning for, I think 2016, they're just going to make one next year. So I'm curious to see what they're going to be doing with the Assassin's Creed formula in the future. But it's definitely a very interesting genre just in terms of trying to cram everything there is. I know Just Cause 3 also met with some similar complaints regarding there's so much to do in that world that sometimes feels overwhelming to someone. You know, you blow it up and there's 50 different points of interest. You know, what am I supposed to do first kind of thing. For you, James, have you played like any of like, the big open world games that we've been talking about?
Yes, actually, it's funny that you guys mentioned, having a brain fart, you guys were just talking about Shadow of Mordor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my lady got that for me for Christmas, and I've played it and beat the game. But one of the things that really got me interested in the game wasn't even the open world. Like, and I'll give you, it's kind of funny, I'll definitely give you some connection there, Josh. Open world games kind of were starting to tire me when I got into it. Mm-hmm. But what kept me going through that game again? A lot, my love things just like Zeke, but also the very fact that I felt like they tried something new that really you hadn't seen done. They have something called the Nemesis system. In the Nemesis system, you have different hostile characters that if they beat you, raise in rank and get more bands and each become more, they almost become like a mini NPC up to the point of war chief, well, characters in the world where it's actually really interesting to see random orc number five mm-hmm. manages to get a killing blow on you, and then when you instead of him not existing anymore, he's risen the ranks. You get to watch what happens after he beat you. He got a promotion, mm-hmm. and he thought you could take out his boss, and he managed to do that. And he's in his boss's place, and now he's been moved up to, instead of patrolling the random fields looking for the hero, he is now in a castle with like 20 more guards. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really interesting system that I kind of wish, like, I would love to see that transferred over to maybe the Batman games,
yeah.
where, you know, death, not only does death, you know, obviously mark the end of the character, you know, just the restart of your character, but it adds more death villain that killed you, turning, again, like I said, turning him from random bad guy number 36 into an actual named boss who mm-hmm. you kind of now have a grudge. He has a grudge against you, and they'll actually, there's dialogue and he remembers killing you mm-hmm. and vice versa. There's times where if you beat the same guy multiple times, he'll remember your scuffles. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Nemesis system was really amazing. I'd love to see it implemented in other games.
Yeah. And I agree with you on that, James. It was definitely like the highlight of the system of the game. And it's, again, something we really don't see. And it really does show the advantages of the open world genre, that it really brings that setting to life. Mm-hmm. It reminds me, like, what you were just saying regarding Batman. I would love to see, like, sort of a cross between, like, what they did with, like, Crackdown and, like, the Nemesis system. In Crackdown, basically, you have, like, all these targets of this criminal organization. And as you keep taking out members of the crime ladder, mm-hmm. it weakens the rest of the organization. So it would be interesting to see, like, sort of a cross between the two, where you're trying to take down some kind of organized group, and the group itself just continues to shuffle and change and grow as you're trying to do your own thing. And again, if you start failing, or depending on your own actions, people may rise up or get demoted because of that. And
I loved Crackdown. Crackdown was an amazing game. Played them.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my all-time favorite open-world games. And with Shadows of Mordor, that system just seems such ripe for other types of games. Like, hell, I would see that working like Assassin's Creed, for instance, with the whole taking out the Templars and trying to deal with someone like that. Like, you die, it would affect things going forward. And it also adds a really great sense of persistence to those mechanics, because normally in these games, you die, everything just, you know, resets, nothing bad happened. But in Shadows of Mordor, when you die, or if you kill someone, everything, you know, you see, like, the ripple effect going out from that. All right. I think that's definitely good talking about Shadows of Mordor. Now, I know, James, we spoke earlier, Cass, you also picked up The Division. What did you think of it?
My first idea was a very cinematic feel. And it really did, like, one of your opening things, I'm not going to try to spoil it too much, but the cinematic overview, maybe like a minute or two overview of what's going on in the world. And they do it in a very media, almost like media fest style, that's really helps bring out the fact that you're playing a Tom Clancy game. Because it's funny, if you look at the game mechanically, and if you knew nothing about the game but just the mechanics, you would not think it was a Tom Clancy game. If anything, you'd think it was another Borderlands. The opening cinematic really helps drive home that this is a Tom Clancy game. Your space aliens aren't going to fly down and start shooting up the place. You know, Godzilla's not going to fly out of nowhere. It is a very human-based game. Now, conspiracy theory, as is Tom Clancy's style, but very human. Very human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Borderlands theme, or the Borderlands style, is that like sort of how like the gunplay works in it?
Yes.
I really picked Borderlands as far as gunplay and loot, loot system driven. Imagine, as far as gunplay goes, imagine if Borderlands and Black Ops had where you have random rolls on loot of different guns, but they are real world guns. Like, you're dealing with MP5s, you're dealing with AK-40s, you're dealing with M3s and stuff like that, and MP11s. Like, you're dealing with actual guns, but with that Borderlands roll, with that Borderlands roll of rarity, and but again, with the Black Ops or Call of Duty ability to almost mod, you can also mod your guns on the fly and make them very personal to how you want them to operate and behave. Again, also in an open world setting and with loot roll. So, like, the green gun is lesser than the blue gun, and the blue gun is lesser than the purple gun. So you almost get these mixed feelings of, I know this, but not, I know all the things that are happening here, but they've never collided like this before, and it's a really good feeling.
Yeah. Now, that actually takes me to an interesting question. This is, again, for someone who hasn't looked too close at a Division. Is the combat, like, I'm not sure how I want to describe this. In terms of the gunplay, is this more like Borderlands in the sense that, let's say I see an enemy ahead of me, I aim my gun and shoot, is it going to be like an RPG where I'm shooting the guy in the head, I'm seeing, you know, plus two damage?
Or yes. Going...
Okay, so yeah, it's not like a Call of Duty game where I shoot a guy in the head, it doesn't matter what my gun, and he's dead. There's more RPG mechanics and abstraction at work.
Yep, very. It's almost like you could easily replace all. You could easily replace all of the guns with swords, swords, knives, axes.
Okay. Okay.
See, you're gonna get that number growth system.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds a lot like what they did again with Borderlands, and even what they were doing with like Fallout with Bethesda, and the fact that it is a real time game. But when you shoot your gun, there is abstraction at work. Does the game have like a traditional leveling system along with the loot for weapons or the rarity?
Yes. There is a leveling system and requirements for the guns. So you might get a level 9 while you're like level 6 and you can't equip it. So.
Okay. Sounds like it's going to be a very interesting game. I know it's been lighting up the sales records at the time of this recording. I think it's also Ubisoft is putting a lot on The Division being their next big game. It's interesting how they're really doing things differently with the Tom Clancy brand. For the longest time with all the Rainbow Six games, it's always been like the same kind of shooter, same kind of gameplay. But with the last Rainbow Six game, The Siege, and now The Division, it's kind of interesting that they're now trying to expand this world and expand their designs. All right, so with that, let's get to our main topic, and that is continuing our discussion on minorities both in video games as well as just their representation in the game industry as well. Previously, when we had Ken James and I on, we talked briefly about this. We also talked about women in the industry as well. So for this one, we're going to focus a little bit more on minorities and people of color. For those of you who missed the previous cast, there should be a link to it in the podcast notes below. So, for this topic, this is one, again, that we're seeing a lot more buzz and interest in the last, I would say maybe like the last year or so. The same thing with women representation in the video game industry and in game design as well. There's always also been that issue with probably representing people of color when it comes to video game characters, and even just having people of color be important figures in video games. There's been, trying to think off the top of my head, I know there's been some stories of game developers who were trying to pitch for characters who are people of color that were turned down. I know there was obviously the big story of Remember Me, with how they were told they didn't want a woman to be the main character, and the game still kind of sold because of it. But I think this is a topic. I know, James, you were very interested in having this discussion. You were part of it from the last one. So I'm going to let you leave things off here. And what do you have to say regarding this topic about people of color in the video game industry?
Okay. So I think there is two different levels. If I were to try to just off the top of my head, split it down to two different levels. Mm-hmm. I believe there is a over-the-top stereotype representation of people of color in video games, mm-hmm. and then there are people of color in video games. And the reason I just separate that like that, that you do see that. You're going to see that kind of division. And it's kind of funny. There literally is a Wikipedia page called List of Black Video Game Characters. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it right now. Okay. And when you think about it, let's take for example Mortal Kombat, because it's one of the most well-known franchises. People know and love the series, love, hate, whatever. Mm-hmm. The over-the-top stereotypical, we need a black person. Mm-hmm. Jax. Now, Jax has been with the franchise. People know the name, but most people know him as the black guy from Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. And when he is the black guy from Mortal Kombat, he becomes that stereotypical, yeah, sweet Christmas, yeah, punch your lights out, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Stereotype. Now, as to whether or not that stereotype is right or wrong, we'll get into that later. I'm just saying that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Mortal Kombat 10 to Jackie Briggs, which, if you can't tell by the name, is Jax's daughter. Jackie Briggs, obviously, is a female African-American Mortal Kombat character. Mm-hmm. And if you heard just for the first, you wouldn't know what color skin she is. You would have no idea what color skin she is based on her voice act, based on the voice actor, based on the direction that was told about that voice actor. And that is a person of color in a video game. Will I say it's a good or bad? I'm going to go ahead and say I think that's a great representation of a person of color in a video game. Mm-hmm. When you cannot tell that it's a person of color, mm-hmm. from just the voice. You know she's Jax's daughter, mm-hmm. From pretty much the name, and her name is Jackie Briggs, and Jax Briggs, if you know his full name. But when you see her, and you see her interaction with the other characters, she doesn't talk in the stereotypical sassy black woman, mm-hmm. sassy street face. She talks like just an average fighter would talk on average young woman would talk on Mortal Kombat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know when we spoke about Mortal Kombat 10, we also talked about how they represent LGBT characters as well. One of the characters was gay. And again, they never made a big deal out of it. They didn't conform to any stereotypes of gay characters. Just like how they didn't do any stereotypical African-American or even like Japan's take on African-American characters in Mortal Kombat 10. As you were just saying, James, the character Jackie, you couldn't tell by listening to her what her ethnicity was, and she just fit into that world very organically, and it worked, mm-hmm. because of that.
Yes. And now, if you look at now that is a more of a case of you have the old school Jax, and then his daughter comes into play, and it's kind of a, you know, we're updating these characters and giving them, you know, she fits into the world. Mm-hmm. Here's an example of just pure example of an African or a person of color. And let's get this straight. There is a difference between African-American and person of color. Mm-hmm. African-American would be somebody that is from, you know, America, who just so happens to have dark skin color as a representation of coming from Africa. Mm-hmm. Zsolimel from the Soul Calibur series is a person of color. He's if you know the backstory, he's obviously not American, but he's a person of color.
is he a representation of we need a black character in this game? No. Mm-hmm. Is he the only black character in the game? Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, I think this is really important for the gaming industry. Can you have a single black character in a video game that fits organically in the world without him being a token black character? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes. Is it hard to do? Okay, I'll give you that. I will give you maybe it's hard to do. But I think with a little bit of work, it shouldn't be that hard to do. And there's another reason why I really wanted Ezekiel here to help, who's also a African-American and person of color, to weigh in there, and a video game fan, to weigh in on what I'm saying.
And now, I think what you just brought up, James, is a very interesting point about having a solo person of color who still fits into the world without it being, you know, the token character. And we're seeing this kind of discussion come up a lot more, even with general media as well, especially with TV shows, with trying to expand and being more inclusive that way. I know when we spoke last time, I brought up the example of The Flash and how they have a character on the show who is gay, but isn't considered, you know, the token gay stereotype.
Also, on The Flash, it's very not... there's no token black person on The Flash. Mm-hmm. There are characters that happen to be people of color, and African-American people of color, but they're not token. They fit into the world organically.
Yeah.
They're people. Like they should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since we haven't heard from Ezekiel in a few minutes, I know you wanted to come on to talk about this, especially as someone who is a person of color and who has been playing video games as a consumer. What has been like your take as someone who's been enjoying the hobby and the industry?
Well, my take on it is, like, a lot of the games that I do play, I don't know whether it's because of games with heavily more of like a white cast, if you will, mm-hmm. or marketed more towards the general public, like everyone, mm-hmm. and those are the games that I consume on a regular basis. You know, I'm starting to get into more like indie independent games, but as of right now, the games that I play are just, you know, more for the general public. Everyone knows about them. They're mainstream, if you will. Mm-hmm. So those games, you know, they tend to do have a lot white characters, which for me as a gamer, like, it isn't a problem because there's a bigger problem than like that. Like, let's see, when was the Oscars? Like a couple of weeks ago? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like with the Oscars and everything that happened this year with the Oscars of hashtag Oscars so white. It wasn't the Oscars' fault that there weren't any black nominees, if you will. It was the fact that there aren't enough roles being written or being produced by or being directed by people of color, African Americans. And I think the same can be said for the video game industry, where how many African Americans are creating video games? And I'm not saying like creating video games just for African American people, but, you know, creating African American based video games where there are, you know, predominant African Americans in them or people of color. And or as well as the voice acting roles that are being offered. How many are being offered for black voice actors, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it really comes down to. Just like with any other type of form of entertainment, video games are entertainment. So is there really an opening for there to be more? Mm-hmm. Is the video game industry changing and evolving to bring in more diversity? I don't really think that it is, just like Hollywood isn't, you know? There has to be a point where we say, no, we need to start doing things differently. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just looking up, because I was trying to think of, like, what's a famous game that has a black voice actor, but he's playing a white character? Mm-hmm. How many of those exist? And one of the ones I could think of is God of War, Kratos. Mm-hmm. He is voiced by by Terrence T.C. Carson, who's a great film actor, and you know, he's well-known in video game world for being Kratos, a great character. Didn't matter the fact that the actor was black, he gave a great portrayal of the character of Kratos. Mm-hmm. And that's what it comes down to, and I think if the video game looked at that and said, hey, guess what? We can still do that, because sure, yeah, video games may not always have more black characters. They just have like the typical token black character just to appease to that audience. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fine, but also black guys can voice white guys. I mean, not like in a rude or demeaning type of a way, but we can voice white characters, and I also don't feel like we're getting the roles necessary to be in video gaming.
Yeah. And I think you made a good point, Ezekiel, about the fact that the industry is still very much behind in terms of being more inclusive outside of the 18 to 30 straight white male demographic. This is what we talked about on the previous cast, especially with women in the industry, and how a lot of big executives and publishers still don't view either women or minorities or people of color as, you know, main character material. And again, trying to think of major African-American characters in video games, those who have been main characters, that list is very short. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, other than like God of War or Kratos, the only other one I can think of would be, I can't believe I forget his name, from The Walking Dead.
His name is Dave Fennoy, is the voice actor.
Yeah. And The Walking Dead was a great game. Again, it was great with having a character who was a person of color fitting into that world. Now, I think this also goes back to where you were saying a few minutes ago, James, with trying to design great characters and that push and pull between creating a great character who's also a person of color versus creating a character who is the quote-unquote token person of color. And a lot of games have had trouble with that balance. Before the cast, we talked about Resident Evil 5, for example. And we also brought the topic of Japan's take of people of color as well. Now, with Resident Evil 5, for those of you who don't remember, the game obviously took place in Africa. You played as, you still play as Leon Kennedy.
Yeah, so Leon, yep.
And the game basically had you, the virus from Resident Evil 4 was here in Africa, and instead of fighting a bunch of European people, he was basically having to mow down tons and tons of Africans. And it drew a lot of ire for that depiction of, you know, the heroic white man going after Africans. And then they, of course, took a step further with having him fight, like, tribal people, too. And we spoke about that kind of representation before the cast. So, James, if you want to continue that thought, because I know you brought up a really good point about that.
I think there's a very interesting dilemma where if you're going to do a game where a white person is in Africa and he's shooting black people, you gotta give him. I understand the story basis, and it's one of those. Okay, are you doing this just for the story, or like, is this necessary? Is this the story that you really need to tell? Mm-hmm. And if so, you can't tell me that everybody in Africa is all coming down with a virus and they're all trying to kill this one white guy. Like, you can't tell me that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That's just not even believable. So, like, you got to tell me there's got to be one or two black people in Africa that do not have a virus and can maybe. I mean, this sounds like even almost worse, but can help this white man deal with these deal with this epidemic in Africa? I don't know. I'm just gonna leave that at that. Let's go on to something a lot better. A good example of black representation. The Elder Scrolls series. The Elder Scrolls series is one of the first, no, sorry, not one of, the first time I saw a person of color in a video game. Mm-hmm. And not even, sorry, not, no, sorry, I used the wrong tense. People of color mm-hmm. in a video game that fit the world, had their own backstory, and if you go back far enough, they're legit, they even have their own video game. Mm-hmm. And it almost sounds weird when I say they have their own video game. That sounds bad. There is a video game about the race of people of color in the Elder Scrolls series. They're called the Red Guards. Mm-hmm. And I think the game is actually called Red Guard. Elder Scrolls Red Guard, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Josh, have you heard of that series? Mm-hmm. It was on the PC.
I know of the Elder Scrolls series itself, but I haven't really played them enough to look at their individual games.
Elder Scrolls Redguard is an actual game, and it's very Arabian themed. It was for PC CD-ROM, came out in 1998. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it is an amazing game, and it's one of those games that I'm just gonna say a young boy or a young person of any color could pick up, have a great story, have a great adventure, and the very fact that he's dealing with 98% people of color, the very fact of their color has nothing to do with the game. Mm-hmm. And then you see Red Guards appear in Elder Scrolls. Now, are there little things that could be very stereotypical? Yes. In Elder Scrolls, in Skyrim and Oblivion, if you pick the Red Guard race as your main character, you get an ability where you get a buff to stamina, which makes you hit really hard and run really fast. Mm-hmm. And my first thought is, do they have, okay, maybe you could go a little bit stereotypical with that. You could pull something out of that and make a, you know, Jesse Jackson could probably tear that a new one. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those, okay, whatever. But you can go through the you being a person of color. Well, it's more important the fact that you're a Red Guard. You're from Hammerfell, which is a fictitious place in the Elder Scrolls universe, and the people of Hammerfell are called Red Guards, and they have dark skin, and that's where it ends. Yes, they have their own culture, mm-hmm. but that's pretty much where it ends, and it fits organically in the world. They're not the token anything. They just, that's that, on that part of the planet, or wherever the Elder Scrolls mm-hmm. universe, Tamriel, right? Is it Tamriel?
I think so.
Yeah, that part of Tamriel, that's the people that live there. You know, no different than orcs, no different than elves. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that the black person is a fantasy creature, but mm-hmm. But you know, those kind of humans live there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking about having people of color fit organically into a game or into a game space, I think that's a good springboard to talk about a game that ran into some complaints and controversy regarding their depiction, and that would be The Witcher 3. Now, for those of you listening, The Witcher 3, of course, done by CD Projekt, and was probably one of their biggest games, I think, of last year. And it takes place in a fantasy take of, I think, where the developers are from Poland. It's based on the book series, The Witcher. And so it's another open-world style game. You have, you know, free reign to go around the land. And what people commented on was the fact that there were, I think, very little to almost no people of color in The Witcher 3's world. And when this was brought up, a common defense of this, both by the developers and by fans of the game, was that they were saying, they were quoting historical accuracy, saying that there wouldn't be people of color at this time in this place, so it was perfectly all right. Now, we started talking about this before the cast, but I think we agree that having like that kind of defense in a fantasy game just seems a little bit bullshit to me. What do you think?
I agree.
Mm-hmm. You think? Okay. Ezekiel, why do you agree? Go for it.
Well, all right. I won't say like I 100% agree. I think I'm more like I 85% agree. Mm-hmm. Because trying to gather my thoughts here. Hold on, I'm sorry. Come back to me. I'm sorry. I gotta gather this.
Okay.
I actually, I'm gonna flip it. I probably 15% agree with that.
Okay.
I about 75% disagree with that, and saying, wait. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. I actually am going to agree with the developers.
Okay.
With the developers in saying that while I think black representation should be done correctly, mm-hmm. that does not mean that every story needs to have black people in it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. If there are no black people in Jade, I think it's Jade Empires, mm-hmm. the Bioware game about. It that's set in a fictional Chinese/Japanese. They never really clarify where they just a fictional Asian world. Mm-hmm. There are no black people in it. Why? Because there are no black people in it. It doesn't go any further than that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to go any further than that. There are times where representation is necessary. A game about. And it's kind of funny because me and Ezekiel are going to be dealing with this on a little bit of a side note, all a little off topic. We're going to be dealing with this year as far as casting for a different venue. But there are certain areas where the likely – not that black people never went there, mm-hmm. just that it's not conducive to the story to have an African-American or person of color in that world or universe.
Mm-hmm. But right there what you just said, Jake, like
– okay.
Now, as you were talking, I kind of realized how more I do agree with you, actually. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you don't need every game, every story doesn't have to have a black person in it. Mm-hmm. It's more of they do more for like a marketing standpoint, just to make sure, okay, we have a black person, so the black people come see this, so we can make more money. Fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, I respect the game developers because they were just like, no, this is how. Mainly was, as I was in the books, whatever. But also, like, history speaking, black people were kind of everywhere. Like, a lot of people fail to realize that. I'm not saying, like, predominantly they were everywhere where people were just like, oh, yeah, I know that black guy down the corner, you know. But in most societies in history, there have been accounts of someone of color being around that was much darker than everyone else around them. Mm-hmm. I'm mm-hmm. not saying that that was like someone of African descent, but, you know, history has shown that, hey, there have been. Now, obviously, those groups of people that were around weren't at every point and everywhere in history, mm-hmm. obviously. So that's why some people, they're just like, oh, the first time I saw a black person, it was like seeing a new species, whatever. Get that. But yes, I kind of do agree. Like, yeah, you don't need a black person in every game, every story, because if it doesn't fit the narrative, if it doesn't propel the story forward, mm-hmm. does it matter? Like, does it hurt the video game? Does it hurt the story that, oh, there's not a black person in it, or that wasn't a proper representation? Does it detract from the actual storytelling of the game you're playing? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's where I kind of come at it. It's just like, if it affects the story, sure. It's always like how I have conversations about when it comes to like comic books and movie adaptations of comic books. It's like, okay, you made this character who used to be white, like in Man of Steel. They made Perry White black. Mm-hmm. Does it take away from the character? No, he's still the same grumpy old man who works at a newspaper. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mm-hmm. really change anything. He's just black now. Okay. You know, Johnny Storm, mm-hmm. he's black. Does it change who he is as a character? No, yes, he was in an awful movie, so that doesn't really help his case, but...
Mm-hmm. Wally West.
Yeah, it's like, does it change anything? No, he's still the same dude. Mm-hmm. He's just a different skin tone. It doesn't affect the story. If it affects the story, then yeah, then we should really bring it up and be like, hey, we need to fix this, but it didn't affect the story, in my opinion.
Okay. And I think that is also a really good point. Again, we're talking about earlier with having gray representations of people of color while avoiding the token stereotype is just having it, again, fit organically in. If they're in, like, I think I do agree with both of you on that extent with someone like The Witcher 3 or with Jade Empire as another example, that if the world that you're building is designed around a very specific race or a very specific group of people, then you can, you're not as tied to saying, why aren't there, you know, other people of color in this world, like with Jade Empire. But I also see the point that in order for there to be a greater representation of people of color, there has to be more of an organic or an easier way to organically fit people into these games where they're not seen as being the token stereotype or that one person. One complaint or one criticism I hear that a lot of people cite is, especially with like having your main character, why aren't more main characters either women or people of color? Is that if it's more about the person's personality rather than their skin color, why can't there be more representation? You brought a good example a few seconds ago with like having African Americans play traditionally white characters in comic books, like Johnny Storm and Wally West. So, what do you think of that criticism when people say, why can't we see more persons of color or even women as main characters in video games?
I think it comes down to the people who are making these projects, these properties. Mm-hmm. I just pulled up this list of like the most popular Black-led video games. Mm-hmm. And they all, for the most part, they all have something in common, which is the list is Saints Row, Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas, the 50 Cent game.
Oh, God.
yeah. Prototype 2, well, I guess just protagonist. Yeah, The Suffering, Crisis 3, kind of, Starhawk, Blade. And when you hear games like that, it's, for the most part, most of those characters are, like, inner-city, ghetto type of characters. And that's like when Black people are usually represented in video games, and when they be more popular, they're usually depicted as thugs, or gangsters, trying to make it through the world, trying to make it through life. Mm-hmm. And like we complain about, oh, there's not enough representation, but we do have games. They're just poor representations because some people, this is, you know, some people who live in, aren't that many Black people. This is how they perceive Black people to be. Ghetto thugs. Like, yeah, like the 50 Cent game is based on a dude who made millions of dollars, who's a big famous rapper, who doesn't really do much now besides acting, but that's like what the video game industry says, hey, this is what you guys get. This is what you wanted, right? It's you guys. No, that's not all of us. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes to where people's perception, like, maybe game companies are just like, well, most of the people of color who do buy our games do come from the hood, do come from the streets. And so that's what we'll give them. We won't give them, like, that strong, confident person who, you know, who lives a good life, who lives straight and narrow, who probably someone murdered his wife, and now he has to go on this revenge streak. You know, we don't get that. We get the guy who, you know, you got to go tag up a side of a wall with your gang symbol on top of another gang. It's like... That's not all of us. That's not who we all are. Yeah, there are people like that, but we're all not like that. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, that's what keeps... That's what becomes popular in video games when it comes to Black characters. Mm-hmm. And so...
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I also... And especially the fact that, Ezekiel, you work with... Now, I mean, I haven't been there, but I'm assuming you work with a lot of young Black children.
Yes, I do.
Am I correct in that assumption?
Yes, you're very correct.
If a young,
Something else I think that really needs to change in the video game industry is they need to give us more variety of black characters. Yes, let's take, for example, Barrett. Mm-hmm. Now, Barrett is a 1990s Japanese man's version of what a black guy is. Now, I know that's a lot of connections there, but that's what it is. Barrett Wallace from Final Fantasy VII is a 1990s Japanese man's version of a black guy. Now he cusses all the time. He's angry. There's a lot of stereotypes there, but all in all, and yet, is he token? Yes, he's token. Are there token characters in other Final Fantasy games? Yeah, we won't get into that. But has he become a loved and endearing character? Yes. If you want to look in, and I think that's just one. I think what what we're really asking for, especially people of color are asking for, give us variety. Don't just show Barrett and make him the poster child for everything. Mm-hmm. That's what every black video game character needs to be. You know what I mean? And I think there is. I think we are seeing different stuff. You know what I mean? I think we are seeing different representations of black people in different cults. Like, Cyborg is a really up and coming character. He just got added. Well, it's not just, but he's been added to the Justice League. Mm-hmm. And Cyborg. Is, yes, he's a football player, which is, you could almost say that's stereotyping, but he's also a tech genius, mm-hmm. whose parents were scientists that had nothing to do with football. You know what I mean? Yeah. And football was actually looked down upon in his family. I think that it was. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to see more varieties of characters in video games, as people of color as characters in video games.
Mm-hmm. To add to your point, sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, to add to your point, as well as we need more variety, we also need compelling characters. Like with that list I read moments ago, how many of those characters are memorable to you guys? Like, do you really remember any of them? Can you really quote anything any of them said? Mm-hmm. No, but you can remember many, like, typically white characters from video games. You can remember them for years and years to come. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to black characters, they're kind of lackluster. There's nothing really meaty about them as characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also lacking. It's just sort of like, it just sometimes feel like video game developers just throw together a black character because they need at least one. And then it doesn't get as much attention as other characters do. Because I'm not just saying the main character are always the most compelling, but sometimes, sometimes the best stories, it's your side characters that really help elevate the story, not just your main character, because usually your protagonist is kind of just, your bland guy who has a mission, and that's what he's going to do, he or she's going to do. But it's the side characters that make it, that give the comedy, that give the drama, because they have different colors, and it makes them interesting and memorable. Mm-hmm. Black characters kind of don't get that attention.
Mm-hmm. Or very few of them do, I'm going down the list of black video game characters, and I got to the F's. Franklin Clinton from Grand Theft Auto, a really big black character. He's a memorable black character. What he's remembered for, that's another thing,
That's a whole nother conversation.
But it's a memorable character, and that's the thing. When they do make a memorable character, mm-hmm. it tends to be that stereotype character, if not named,
The examples we brought up when Ken was on last time was a character from Binary Domain, and there's of course the token black character in Metroid Other M, who, again, I cannot remember this guy's name to save my life, but I remember like how that character responded, and I think that sort of proves your points there regarding that there really aren't any noble African-American characters, or even people of color in the video game industry, other than if they're in, like, the sidekick role, or, that overtly stereotypical role that someone designed them for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess this is one...
Roland! Roland! from Borderlands.
Oh, yeah.
While he does kind of play that stereotypical black guy as soldier, mm-hmm. He becomes his... The very fact that you can pick him as an option, and he's very embedded into the world mm-hmm. organically in Borderlands. And, again, sad to say, like, I'm struggling here to find a black character that's memorable, mm-hmm. that's embedded into the character, you know, that's embedded into the world, mm-hmm. you know.
Other than, of course, like Lee from The Walking Dead. Who,
yeah.
again, that was just an amazing game. And one of the few times where a person of color was the main character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, let's see. I'm trying to think if there's any other major topics. Now, one question that I wanted to bring up on the cast that we sort of were talking about before was, and we've sort of been like talking bits and pieces about during this last section, was Japan's take on people of color. As we were just saying, a lot of the stereotypical character designs usually come from Japan, like Barrett from Final Fantasy VII being a top example. And I know, mm-hmm. James, you asked Ezekiel an interesting question, if you want to reiterate that here.
Oh, wow. I apologize. I don't remember what the question was.
Regarding, do we...
Oh, should we give them a pass? Yeah. Should... we give Japan a pass if their views of a person of color / African American characters are stereotypical.
Mm-hmm. Yes and no, in my opinion. I'll go with yes first. Yes, we should give them a pass because generally, how they perceive black people is from usually our American media. Mm-hmm. And let's be frank, it's not really always the best. Yeah. So that's what they go off from. Just like in America, we have a bunch of old like kung fu movies that we love and adore. They probably have a bunch of old like blaxploitation films that they love, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where they get their inspiration from. So it's sort of like, it's not their fault. But now here's where it comes with the no, we shouldn't, because it's like you can also do other research where, you know, we're on the interwebs as we speak. It's a thing. It's a thing that people use that's very vast and very deep, and you can use that. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, pick up a phone, call somebody, just be like, hey. Or just, you know, like how... like some businesses, they bring in consultants to help, like specifically like advertising places. Mm-hmm. They bring in people like study groups and people to just be like, all right, you could try it this way because I will speak to my group of people a little bit more. You know, just bring in some guys, you know, some black brothers and just be like, hey, does this sound right to you? Mm-hmm. Is this your people? And they'll probably say, no, that isn't. And then they can give notes, ideas, mm-hmm. not trying to direct their story, but just be like, hey, this is how not all black people are like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, so here's the, yeah.
It's both. But go ahead.
I was gonna say, do they have that available? And that's something that I think is an honest question. I'm asking it for the white developers. I'm asking it for the Asian developers. Do they have these resources? I mean, other than the internet, of course. But physical, like people and resources to talk to get that side of things.
I'm sure they do. Do they want to? That's a whole other thing. But I'm sure they do. Maybe not as much as there is like in America. But I mean, there are people, black people who live in Japan. They do. Are they like in the video game industry? Probably not. But you know, just like how we have all like these BuzzFeed videos of people just going on the street and doing random interviews and just asking questions and making polls about them. You can also do that. It's not hard. I mean, if you go to Japan, you see a black person, they're going to stick out like a sore thumb. It's not like it's a far-fetched thing.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I feel like they do, maybe not a lot. So I can understand that. I see that. I just feel like there probably is. They just need to look a little hard.
I just saw on here that Mega Man Powered Up they have a character called Oil Man.
Yes, they do.
I mean, they also have, like, Raven from Tekken, but I just thought that was funny. But.
So far, this has definitely been an interesting cast. It's one of those topics that I don't think we're going to find the solution to in just one cast or one discussion. The same thing goes for the video game industry, and especially with our previous cast talking about women in the industry and being represented as well. I think this is going to be one of those ongoing topics, which we will probably hear more about over the coming months, maybe even the coming years. I think what we said last time, that we're starting to see a little bit of forward momentum, but I think it's going to be, you know, inches until, you know, things explode. We're seeing some general movement from the independent market where they're not being as hampered by publishers and focus groups to have either more women or more people of color as either main characters or just important figures in their games. The example I think we've talked about several times already would have been The Walking Dead, which came from Telltale Studios, which they're definitely not independent, I think, at this point. They're definitely more like of a AA studio. Well, that's probably one of the big examples of having a person of color as the main character, and more importantly, as a memorable main character. Now, to start to wrap things up, I want to go back to what you said at the beginning of the section, James, talking about the difference between having someone who's a person of color in a game versus having a person of color who's the token. And I think this would be a good way of tying a bow around this cast, around the discussion, if you could just, like, for people listening, like, in your opinion, what are some, I guess, common elements of making that work, of having someone who may be the one African-American or the one Asian character, but avoiding, like, the stereotypical themes or the tokenism, if it were?
In order to avoid the tokenism, make your person of color a character that anybody of any race could relate to. Mm-hmm. And by relate to, I mean more, not just relate to, but relate to and or understand. Mm-hmm. When you remove, I like what Zeke said, if the story is good enough and you care about the character, doesn't matter what color they are. Yes. But at the same time, if that's true, then unless you are making a game that's specifically taking place with a specific group of people, you can throw in a person of color and make them a character, and it doesn't really, it shouldn't matter. And there are many games, Pokemon has a character called Iris. Mm-hmm. She's a Pokemon trainer. And that's as far as it goes. Mm-hmm. She's a Pokemon trainer. You can love her mannerisms. She doesn't really do anything stereotypical that would be considered someone could find offensive. She's a fun character. She's just a little girl that's a Pokemon trainer that exists in that world. And I think when you have more characters that just flat out exist in the world without them being tied to any sort of stereotype, you're gonna see you're gonna see more people happy with representation. You're gonna see more people that can look to a character, and if they see themselves in that character because of skin color, great. If they see themselves in that character because of the character itself, regardless of skin color, even better.
And I think another example that we mentioned earlier was Jackie Briggs from Mortal Kombat 10 again.
Exactly.
All right. Ezekiel, do you have anything to add there?
Simply, it just comes down to making a good character. White, black, Asian, purple, gray, doesn't matter. Just make a good character. If the most important thing about them is the fact that they're black, then you're not making a good character. That's when you are making them a stereotype.
I was going to say it's the same thing we hear when people try to have, you know, the stereotypical female character in a game, where you're just putting character in there to check off the list. Oh, this is the female character. This is the African-American character. When the skin color or the gender is their dominating trait, that's usually the sign of a weaker character in terms of writing and storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that is only a good point to end things on, at least for right now. As I said a few minutes ago, this is not one of those discussions that A, is going to be going away anytime soon, or B, one that I think we're going to solve with just one podcast. And I'm definitely curious, I'm sure you guys are as well, to see how the industry will be going forward in light of more talks about the game, trying to make video games more inclusive, not just to women, but to people of color, and getting away from the same old straight white male demographic. So, with all that said, I think we're going to wrap things up here. Ezekiel, it was great having you on tonight, and hopefully, if you have any more free time coming up, we could always catch up and talk more about games in a later cast.
Yeah, that'd be great. I had fun doing this. Love to do it again.
Awesome. And James, it was great having you on. At this time of the recording, I believe this is your second cast in the co-host seat. How are you finding it?
I love it, actually. It's a lot of fun. So, and I hope to do more, and maybe once in a blue moon, I'll be able to host my own.
Awesome, yeah. It'll be great to have those casts either as companions or as, you know, having those be standing on their own, maybe as one of the Friday casts. All right. So with all that said, thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Perceptive Podcast. As always, if you would like to support Game Wisdom or check us out, there are several options currently available. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find all the submissions... If you would like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find all the information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. We are looking for enthusiasts, students, developers, anyone interested in talking the industry, playing games, or design. Definitely shoot me an email. If you'd like to contribute to our ongoing Patreon campaign to secure monthly funding, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom or by clicking that little Patreon banner on the front page, and any donations would be greatly appreciated. As always, be sure to subscribe both on Twitch and Twitter under GW Blazer. That way you will get the latest updates for whenever I make new posts, upload videos, do my live streaming, which is usually around 10 Eastern. And those recordings will be going up on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, which there is a link to that on the front page, and you can find me on YouTube under Game Wisdom. Lots of great videos up there, including Let's Plays of The Darkest Dungeon, Grim Dawn, and as I said earlier, of the Pinball Arcade. So, again, thanks a lot for tuning in to this episode. Hopefully by the time you hear this, I will be well rested from my little vacation and will be hard at work making great posts and podcasts for you all. So, have a great rest of the week, and we will see you all again next time. Take care.